Back in 1974, the last day of deer season, it was about 23 degrees, and I usually went hunting with a buddy of mine, and it was too cold for him, too bad. So I decided I'd go by myself, and it was 21,000 acres of woods, and I was a pretty bad outlaw back then, and hadn't killed a deer, so I decided that day I was going to kill a deer. Regardless, it didn't matter if it was horned or not, legal or not. And a deer came out, and I shot it, and it wounded it. And I started tracking it, and it wasn't long, I was lost. And like I said, it was bad, bad cold. And anyway, I followed it, and for a little while, and then I realized I was lost, and I gave up on the deer and started trying to find my way back out. And the more I ran, the more scared I got. And then I found an old road, and I started down it hoping that I'd find maybe somebody else. But I guess everybody else was smarter than me. They all had, I guess, done and harvested the deer they wanted and give up. And well, I tried shooting up in there three times. That's what you're supposed to do, you know, if you lost. And even a game warden had done give up on, you know, coming down in there. They wouldn't even try to find out, you know, who it was down there in the woods. And so I ran crying because, like I said, I knew I was bad lost. And I ran about a mile. And then I decided I was going the wrong way. So I turned around and ran right back to where I was at. And, you know, a voice told me, said, Jimmy, you as lost in this world as you are in these woods. And, oh, Jimmy, I'm hard-headed, you know, bad hard-headed. And I decided, well, I'm still going to do it by myself. So I took off running again. And I ran right back to where I had run before. And turn around and run right back where I was before again. And by this time, it done got on over in the afternoon. And so I said, well, this ain't going to get it. You know, Lord puts you in places where he wants you to be. And he puts all the exact circumstances where you can't help yourself. He wants you to realize, you know, that you're going to have to depend on him. Well, like I said, I'm bad hard-headed. And so I had a whole pocket full of bullets. And so I'd shoot up in there and I'd wait a while. And nothing. And so I didn't smoke cigarettes or anything like that. But I felt all my pockets. And I guess the good Lord supplied me with a cigarette lighter. Because I said, I don't have no idea how that got in my pocket unless the Lord put it there. So I sat down there and tried to start me a fire. And everything was too wet to build me a fire. And they had been clearing some timber down there. And the road that I was running down made a curve right there where I was at. And they had thrown a tree right in the road. And every time I'd come to that curve, well, I'd turn around and go back. And I'd come right back to that curve, and I'd turn around and go back. Well, that, like I said, I finally just sat down, and I said, okay, Lord, if I can get out of here, I can promise you I'll be in church first chance I get. Well, at 11 o'clock that night, you know, it done started sleeping, and I done give up, like I said, because I knew wasn't nobody else going to come down there because, like I said, it was the last day of hunting season. Everybody done got their stands out. Nobody was coming down there to get me. I done give up. And the Lord said, well, you know, this is how I want you. I want you to where you know that you can't do it by yourself. Now, are you right where I can work with you now? You know, so I said, well, yeah. Lord, I see that I'm going to have your help. And so I started praying then. And so up until that point in there, I hadn't been praying. I'd been depending on Jimmy. And said, so, I sat there, and after I'd prayed, I shot my gun 2 or 3 times. The wind was blowing from the levee back toward me. And I still had some bullets left. So, little as I know that that friend of mine had done been contacted, and he done contacted some state troopers and the game wardens and all, and they were up just lined the levee down up through there. And they couldn't hear me shooting because the wind was blowing the sound back toward me. And at 11 o'clock that night, the wind finally laid, and I shot. And they could hear me, and so they started shooting. And so I shot again, but they knew which direction to go then. So a friend of mine, he had a four-wheel drive. So he come down through the woods. You know, whenever I heard them shoot, then, boy, my heart started beating there. You know, I said, I'm going to get saved yet, you know, out of these woods. Well, when I turned around and looked, the road that made the curve, that treetop was right there. And that's the way I needed to go all along, you know. So, you know, like I said, whenever the guy pulled up, that treetop was blocking my way out all that time. You know, the Lord had that blocked so I couldn't get out, you know. So I couldn't find my way out until the right time. And when the right time was after I gave my heart to Him. And so, you know, God looks on the inside, and I'm glad He does, because if He had looked on the outside of me, He would have kept on, you know, somebody else. And so I'm glad He looks in on the inside of me, because I wasn't worth nothing, I'm telling you. And so I started changing that day. And so that's what this is all about right here. Now, I was out working in my shop one day. And this is a total compared to my life. And, you know, when people look at this, all they see is an old log. And like I said, it's just one of the rough boards that they cut. They cut as many as they could out of that log. And that's just a butt cut off of a log that I had. But like I said, it's just an old rough. It's real rough. Got splinters all over it and all. And like I said, but that's... Was just exactly like me, like I said, real rough, and God started working on me, and shaving me down, knocking all the rough places off of me. Now I got a planter's house, and what it does, you run that through a planter, and it starts. Not only does it start shaving it down and knocking all the splinters and all off, it starts to making it the same thickness. It really does. It trims it down and knocks all the, you know, a lot of the pine shaving and all, the cedar shaving and all comes off. It starts shaping it up to just where you can work with it and to where you can start building something out of it. And like I said, you just keep running it through, and making the changes. Well, I don't know whether you can see this very good, but this is after you run it through that planer several times, it becomes so slick, it's just like glass. And so it's got rid of all the high spots, all the splinters and all that. It's even getting better. It's like my life, you know, is knocking all those splinters and high spots off of me, you know. And as I said, you know, you don't know how a person's life is and what they do behind your back, and you know, and all this, you know, you don't know what they do away from here. It's just all this is a bag of the cedar chips. This represents my life. And the changes that God made that you can't even see. This is just changes that represent what God did. This right here represents the change that you can see. And that's mighty small that on the outside that you can see compared to what is on the inside that you can't see. And so, like I said, God does a miracle, you know, has done a miracle in me. And, you know, we talk about miracles every day. You know, and I am a miracle, no doubt about it. You know, this, I want to open this up. I want to show you God has, through his work and constant changes, constant attention on me, and he's finally made something for each of us. This is what he expects. He makes something that we're of service to others. And this is what you get from a rough log to something that can be used to serve others with. And like I said, so this is what, you know, we all, you know, expect to be turned out to. Now this is not perfect. This has got some, bad spots in it, and it's just like my life, even yet. You know, God's still working on me, you know, every day. And so, I don't claim to be perfect by no means, but, like I said, I'm sure a lot better than what I was many years ago. And, I'm thankful for that day in the woods. I'm thankful that the guy decided he didn't want to go with me, because, like I said, it's been a major change in my life. I've got a plenty of time here to tell you about a miracle that happened in my life. One day at work, I worked at a place that had some guys there, and they loved to do practical jokes. And we got spraying, using all the fire extinguishers, spraying each other. And we thought we'd done used all the fire extinguishers up. And last minute, I worked on commission, and I didn't get paid overtime. And last minute, shop foreman came to me, and he said, "Man, I need you to stay late, because I got a gas tank on a truck that the O-ring on top of the gas tank is leaking, and we got a guy coming from Monroe to get this truck. He ordered it, and he's done left, and we promised him we'd let him get this afternoon." And I said, "Man, I don't want to stay." I said, "I don't get paid overtime." He said, "Man, I need you to." He said, "You and one more guy needs to stay and pull this gas tank off and put that O-ring on. It shouldn't take you very long." And boy, I was mad. And didn't want to do it. Well, when you get in a hurry, you know, and you're mad, well, you'll mess up every time. Well, I run in there, and I said, "Okay." So I run a jack underneath the back of the truck and just jacked the back end of it up. And I got the other guy out there with me, and we got on creepers and slid under the truck. Took our air impact wrenches and all, slid under there, and we hooked a drop light, one of the old metal drop lights, on the brake cable under there, and took transmission jack and put it under the gas tank. And the gas tank truck was at an angle like this, therefore the gas tank was. And gasoline was running out everywhere, all over. I'm talking about probably 10 or 12 foot each side of the truck. And never even crossed our minds that accidents could happen. And it's after quitting time. And the older mechanic was sitting over on a shop table over on the other side of the shop watching us. And all of a sudden, the guy that was working with me under there, he was going to scoot a little closer so that he could get some of the bolts loose. And he knocked that drop light off. And when it hit the floor, the bulb popped. And when it did, it set the gasoline on fire. And just like that, we were surrounded by fire. I'm talking about a fire that was coming up this high on the side of the truck. And we're under there on these creepers. Well, I mean, we were going to be burned up, there's no doubt. In my mind now, looking back on it, there's three or four miracles happened right then, just back to back, very quickly. Like I said a while ago, we thought we'd done used all of the fire extinguishers up. That guy on the table grabbed the fire extinguisher, and we hadn't had any of the fire extinguisher filled, but good Lord supplied a fire extinguisher right there by that table. And he run over there, and that mechanic shouldn't have been there. He should have already been home. Normally would not have stayed past 5 o'clock, but he was there sitting on that table. That's the first miracle. Another fire extinguisher not being used up was the second miracle. The third miracle was he run over there and just 3 squirts of that fire extinguisher put that gasoline fire out that covered probably 30 feet or more. The fourth miracle, neither one of us was burnt. Now that's a miracle. That's God. That ain't nothing but God. I said, it had changed the paint. It had changed the wires. It had burnt the coating on the wires underneath that truck, but neither of us was burnt. And like I said, God is good. God is good. And so, you know, that's some testimony that I'm telling you. I've got a lot more I can share with y'all, but I'm going to turn it back over to Cricket.
Would you share the one that, when you were working out the concrete plant, that really affected your health all those years?
I worked out at Eldorado Chemical. I drank some water. They got their water out of the ground. Now they say they didn't. My problems didn't come from out there, but they right there could be some argument there. But anyway, I wound up and got sick the day or two before Christmas in 1991, and I went to the doctor there, and it was a company doctor, by the way. And I went to the doctor in a smack over. And he told me I had food poisoning. Well, he gave me a shot and some medicine. And I went to, I couldn't go back to work because I was bad sick. And so I told my wife at the time, I'd been divorced. And I told her, I said, we might as well go to Louisiana and visit my folks. I said, because I was expecting this medicine and everything to kick in, you know, and I was going to be over it. Now we could visit them through Christmas. Well, I got down there and, I was in worse shape, so I told her to carry me to the emergency room in Oak Grove, and they did the same thing, gave me the same medicine in a shot. So I went back to my mom and them. Well, within just hours, I told them, I said, oh, you're going to have to do something. You're going to have to carry me to Monroe to the hospital over there because I'm even worse shape now. So they carried me to Bastrop. Got as far as the little town there between where I lived and Bastrop, with Marouge, and there at the railroad tracks, I lost consciousness. Well, so the next hospital, the nearest hospital, was Bastrop. So they stopped in the Bastrop area, and they put me in Bastrop Hospital, where they put me in quarantine for 3 months. I stayed in quarantine there, and they did 2 surgeries on me for exploratory surgery, and couldn't figure out what was wrong with me. So they brought doctors in from all over the country, trying to figure out what was wrong with me. And meantime, my stomach had swollen up, looked like I was 9 months pregnant. And they had pumps on me, pumping the poison out of my stomach, out of my inside cavity. And the room that I was in, whenever they would come in there, they had to almost hold their nose. Death was in that room so strong. I tell you, but my mom was a praying woman. And she got all the churches around there praying for me. And I was in a coma, and when they tell you that these people that's in the coma can hear you, they can. I could. And the 2 doctors come in there and they said, they were standing right by the bed and they said, no, we can't do nothing for this boy. He's dying. And said, we might as well up his morphine to fully dose off all he can handle because he's not going to make it. And so they did. And so, about 3 or 4 days later, whatever it was, the doctors come back in there and said, "You still alive, boy?" You know, I guess I done gained consciousness. And I said, "Well, yeah, I'm still here." And they said, "Well, let's see if we can't do something about this, you know." Well, they did all kind of different things to me. And like I said, never did figure out what was wrong with me. And so my sister encouraged me to see if they would send me somewhere else. And so I asked them where they might could send me. And they suggested either Houston or Ochsner's in New Orleans. And so they sent me to Ochsner's, thinking maybe that since they were right there and people all over the world go to New Orleans, so they figured maybe that they had run into something like this. And so they sent me down there, and we just within a few days they had figured out that I had parasites in my colon and that they had 8 holes all in it. And so they gave me some poison treatments to try to kill them. And it was, I guess, evidently that burned them, and they moved up into my lungs. And I was coughing real bad. They had just done surgery on me to try to see how bad it was on my colon. And I was coughing so hard, well, I busted open. And so they went ahead the next day, and I was wheeling me back to the operating room, and I told the doctor, I said, he explained to me that he may have to take my colon out, that they had just about done everything they could to try to save it. And I said, "Doctor, please don't do that to me." I said, "You let me die. Don't do that to me." I was 38 years old, something like that. I couldn't see a 38-year-old man living the rest of his life with a colostomy bag on his side. And so he didn't say anything. I told myself, I said, "Just let me die. Don't do that to me." And so they wheeled me on into the operating room and took my colon out. And when I was in recovery, I come to, the first thing I did, reach and rub my stomach there, and there that bag was. Well, I was very upset, and I was asking God why, and why, you know, please let me die, you know, because I felt like I was anyway. And when the doctor finally came and checked on me, I was very angry at him. And I asked him why he didn't let me die, because that's what I had asked him to do. And he told me that he wasn't in the business of letting his patients die. If he had, you know, any, you know, a hope of saving their lives, then that's what he was going to do. And I stayed down there most of a year and a half. And with them operating on me off and on, and they asked me, they says, which, I went to a psychiatrist down there to handle the depression and everything, having that colostomy bag. And that's a demeaning situation for anybody to get in, man or woman. It don't make no difference to have one of those. You got to experience that to understand what it's like. But they asked me. They said, "If it was possible to reverse that thing, would you go for it?" And I said, "I don't understand what you're talking about. Reverse it. You took all my colon out." They said, "Oh, they take your small intestine and make you a bag on the inside." And I said, "Well, yeah, if it's possible, yeah." So they said, "Well, there's some tests that you got to go through." So I went through the test, and they told me that I qualified for it, but it would be 4, 5, 6 months before I healed up good from the other surgery, you know. But they let me out, and I went home. And where they had went, well, no, they went ahead and did the reversal, and they sent me home. Well, I was home, and I went to my brother's house, and I ate supper there. I ate 4 spoonsful of mashed potatoes and a half a chicken leg. And 3 hours later, I got hurting so bad, I didn't know, but I had a pinched intestine. My brother took me back to New Orleans and they had to operate on me again and take 3 inches out of my intestine. And so I had a bad fight. I had 8 surgeries and all to get me fixed. And of course, it made a world of difference in me, like I said. But I finally got, you know, all the time I had the colostomy bag, I was very mad at the doctor and the God. You know, I couldn't forgive God for letting me live like that, you know, because the thing, you know, it would, it caused all kind of problems. And, but, after I got it fixed, you know, I got to enjoying life. It made it a lot easier, you know, regardless of what you go through, if you'll hang in there, you know, and if you got somebody like my mom was, my mom spent 3 months in my room at a time on a cot praying for me. And I didn't know it, but whenever I'd left after having that plugged up intestine, I was screaming and hollering because it hurt so bad. Well, she was upset so bad that when I left, she had a heart attack. And all the time I was back down there getting operated on again, she was in the hospital with a heart attack. And so when they let me out down there, my brother says, "You want to go visit your mom?" I said, "Well, ain't she home?" I said, he said, "No, she's in Shreveport in the hospital." I said, "What's she in the hospital for?" He said, "She had a heart attack today that she had to go back in their hospital." I said, "Well, yeah, I want to go visit her." So I went over there and visited her. But all in all, everything worked out great. Like I said, my family knows what God's all about. But God, I believe that God held me on the knife-blade edge between life and death to prove to my family, and not only my family, all the people down here where I'm from, it showed them that he's in control. Not the doctors, not the doctors, but he's in control. And that it's left up to him where you live or die, not the doctors, and not me. I said, because I'm telling you, I begged for death several times. But like I said, God knows what he's doing. You know, God knows what he's doing. And I'm here today. I'm here today because of God. I am a product of prayer. There's no doubt about it. Mama is reading. I'm here today in God. I say, thank God.
Thank you, Lord.